This episode of the DDMH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan, D-U-N-C-I-N, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Solar Observatory.
Greetings to you, my sweet, beautiful children of the noontime bloom. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And dear God, every once in a while, you reel in a great podcast, like a great, beautiful, hyper-dimensional podcast, like you are sailing on some kind of moon ship and you are fishing with the skulls of cremated, enlightened beings, and you got a bite from inside a black hole and you pull it out and there it is, this incredible sonic blast of magic. That's what we got today. So I'm not going to spend any time on any kind of intro. We're just going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business.
Roger fell into the chipping machine. His brains and his body were turned into cream. Bits of his spine flew up in the trees, and all of us were screaming.
But before Roger's widow put on her black lace, she went to his website he made on Squarespace, and using an AI reconstructed his face, and now he lives on forever.
My name's Roger, and I live eternally in a screen. I've been reconstructed, it's a dream. I'm so glad that I used Squarespace.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Friends, did you know at some point in the future, could be next year, could be 500 years, technology is going to reach a point where you could actually be reassembled by an artificial intelligence using your social thumbprint or whatever you've done online. Give that AI a head start. Create a website. Reassemblememe.com is available. If an AI was on the fence about reassembling you and saw your website, it wouldn't be on the fence anymore. You could live forever, but not if you don't have a website. You see, at some point in the future, could be next year, could be 500,000 years, artificial intelligence is going to be at the point where it can gather bits of data from your social thumbprint, every little thing you've done online. And if you don't have a website, then it's going to use all of your tweets and it's going to use all your Facebook posts to determine who you were.
Don't let that happen.
Which is why you should go to squarespace.com and create a beautiful website listing everything that's great about you or that you wish were great about you. Reassemblemeplease.com is available, friends. Or maybe you're a Luddite and you don't want to be reassembled by an artificial intelligence in the future. Please don't reassemble me in the future.com. It's available. You could be someone who, for whatever crazy reason, doesn't want to live eternally inside a computer as an avatar slave. Or maybe you just want to create a beautiful website to showcase your work or publish content or sell products and services or do anything at all. The point is, Squarespace will allow you to do this easily because they have beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, and the ability to customize look and feel, settings, and products with just a few clicks. You can make it yourself, and you can make it stand out with Squarespace.com. Want to see a great Squarespace website? Go to DuncanTrussell.com. It really is an amazing service that will save you a lot of time and certainly a lot of money. Right now, you can head over to Squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. You don't even have to put your card in. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Roger! I live in the computer! It's great here! I love it here! It's great!
I have been a naughty boy. Please don't spank me anymore. You're my patron, master, mistress, king of all I do. I will water your feet with my tears. You can can bury me up to my neck. Spank my cheeks with your ass and throw me in the gutter. I bow to you, oh noble patron. Sit on the throne, the patron's throne. Join us at patreon.com/DTFH.
Become my noble master. Head over to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up. You'll get commercial-free, unsullied editions of the DTFH that come out sometimes weeks ahead of other episodes. Though, I must admit, I'm in a bit of a podcast. I don't know what you call it. I'm recording them week to week now. I've got to bank them again. But when I bank them, they first go to Patreon, and then they go onto the main feed. Also, once a month, you'll hear a long, rambling monologue thing. It's a fantastic... Oh, also, we've got a Discord server where you can communicate with others who are drawn to this podcast or things we talk about in this podcast. Go over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. We also have a shop located at duncantrussell.com with all new stuff. If you've seen the old DTFH stuff, claw your eyeballs out. Forget about that crap. Chop your hands off. Set your nipples on fire. Go running into a massive puddle of bubbling semen. Forget about the old shop, the old stuff, and then we got all new stuff. Beautiful, sweet new merch. You can find that by going to duncantrussell.com and clicking on the merch section. And finally, certainly, last but not least, if you want to help out the Love Server Member Foundation, they have created, I don't know what you call it, a new musical division where they're combining forces with musicians like Justin Beretta, today's guest, and lots of other, hopefully lots of other musicians to create musical representations of some of Ram Dass's lectures and teachings and other members of the Satsang's teachings. They want to produce albums, basically, and so they're raising money to do this. You can go to propeller.la, sign up, donate some money to the Love Server Member Foundation, and you will enter into, I guess, a sweepstakes. I don't know what you'd call it, but you could potentially get a free retreat from November 28th to December 3rd, which is pretty incredible. So if you enter this thing, you know, and they draw your name, you'll be going to Hawaii and laying in the sun and snorkeling and drinking Mai Tais and absorbing the transcendental teachings of some of the great spiritual teachers of our time. Also great Mai Tais, great snorkeling, beautiful reefs, and it's right down the street from the Ritz. I don't know why you'd want to go to the Ritz, because it's a beautiful resort. I went up there and ate sushi once, and I felt weird that I wasn't at the retreat. So that's great. Holy shit, do we have an amazing guest with us today. The Glitch Mob, as you already know, is a powerhouse band. They create some of the most amazing electronic music, and they put on these hardcore, incredible shows. If you've never been to a Glitch Mob show, you've got to go. It's like a combination alien landing, teleportation into another realm, mixed in with atomically vibratory music. I don't even know what that is. You're going to get your atoms vibrated at these shows. Justin's a music producer, a musician, and a spiritual seeker, and he just made one of the coolest renditions of a Ram Dass meditation that I've ever heard. We talk about it in the podcast, so let's just jump into this thing. Everybody, please, without further ado, welcome today's esteemed guest, Justin Beretta.
Welcome, welcome all of you. Glad you are with us. Shake hands, no need to be blue. Welcome to you. It's the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. I couldn't find the theme song. I looked all over my computer.
Yeah, we're rolling. Would you talk into your microphone, please?
Check, 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 1, 2.
That looks good.
How's that?
It looks pretty good. Let me turn yours up
a little bit. I could scoot a little more forward, too.
Pop that up a little bit. I think that looks good. Would you talk into it one more time?
Perfect. Check, check. 1, 2,
oh,
1, 2.
Beautiful. Okay, great. All right. There we go. Justin, welcome to the DTFH. Thank you so much for coming over, man.
Hello, Duncan.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Holy shit, man. I got to get this out of the way, because if I don't do it up front, I think not only will I be disappointed in myself, but all of the fans of the Glitch Mob who might be listening to this will be disappointed. We have to address it, and then I want to dive into the deep spiritual waters, even though the glitch mob and those deep waters I don't think are separated at all.
Absolutely.
But so I'm going to ask you the cheesiest question of all time, but I got to ask it. I was going to the raves when there were like video arcades, you know, like when video arcades were how you would mostly play cool video. I was going to the raves when Mortal Kombat 1 was like amazing, you know, back in those days.
Finish him.
Yeah, exactly. And I always got this weird impression, depending on how high I was, that the music was coming from like aliens or from some kind of higher consciousness or some kind of like, this was a channeled transmission coming in from some other realm.
Yeah.
So the glitch mob, not DJs, but I don't know what, I don't know. Like, I'm not even sure how you would like describe this phenomena, which is you guys put on this incredible show that makes me think, well, I guess if a UFO landed, this is certainly one of the ways it might show itself. So forgive me. I know it's a long setup to a very simple question.
Sure.
Is the music coming from aliens?
The answer is yes.
I knew it! I knew it!
And we are all aliens here.
Oh, yeah, right.
There's something about music, then this is also going to sound like a platitude and it's going to sound cheesy, but it's true, is that the best stuff happens when we get out of the way and we don't actually really know where it comes from. And it's like when we think about it and we overcomplicate the whole process too much and we analyze, then it can become contrived. But all of the best moments have come from somewhere else, and it's really, really true. So maybe it's from aliens, maybe it's from the universal loving awareness consciousness orb in the sky. Who knows what it actually is? I really can't say for sure, but it is true though that there's something about electronic music and the way that we play live that is us trying to tap into some otherness that you can get into with music. So we play an instrument that we've built that's custom. It's called the Blade.
Yeah.
And there's something very cinematic about it. And the whole thing is just another way into the music and back in. So we create the visuals and the videos are all stuff that will lead rabbit holes back down into the music. But the truth is we don't actually really fucking know how the music works. At the end of the day, it kind of just comes from somewhere.
Right. That somewhere is what I want to talk with you about today.
Yeah.
The one thing that I have... I think it's bad. Like, the older I get, and now that I have a child coming, I guess you could say I'm getting soft. And, like, all the things I used to really shake my fist at angrily.
Yeah.
Now it's just kind of like, I don't want to. I know why you were trying to do that. You're cool.
Yeah.
But in the past, one thing that I've just viciously just gotten really, in the dumbest way, angry about is, like, you'll listen to, like, Terrence McKenna. You'll look for Terrence McKenna lectures. And somebody has gone and put a fucking trance music underneath it. Yes. And you're like, I want this free of trance music. I just want to listen to it.
Just hit the mute button on the song.
Yeah. And the reason is because it's like Terrence McKenna is channeling the over there in his own way. And whoever is putting the sound bed underneath it is like somebody running around in front of Terrence McKenna with like pom poms or something, right? It's like we don't need Terrence McKenna, doesn't need cheerleaders.
Sure.
I just like him straight. Okay.
Absolutely.
And so I've always thought, why does this always happen, this phenomenon? But then, Justin, you annihilated my ridiculous and backwards and small minded idea. That we can't interlace music with great spiritual teachings with your track, Imagine, that you did with Ram Dass.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God. It was so incredible. It's one, to know that now I have eternally this tool to help me meditate, but two, to like watch the way that, or listen to the way that you have purely reflected that what that is into sound. Oh, wow. How did you do it, Justin? That's incredible to me.
Thank you. That means a lot.
You know what? Maybe I'll just stop here. I'm going to play a little bit. Okay. Can I play a little? Do you mind if I play a little clip of it?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay.
So in the next few minutes when I'm reading to you, try to find a comfortable place where you can be with your head, neck, and chest in a straight line. And you could be lying flat down, or you could be sitting up. Meditation is many things. It can be meditating on an object of meditation. Or it can be a process of letting all objects go by. The process now is to dislodge ourselves from our inordinate attachment to our own thoughts.
So tell me the process of making this kind of music.
Sure.
That pairs with one of the great spiritual teachers.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a long story, and I don't think I've actually really articulated the whole thing out to anyone. It's funny because I had a very similar experience with some Alan Watts teachings. I love Alan Watts, and I had been reading him for a long time. And I remember going on YouTube and listening to some of his talks, and most of them don't have music. But every now and again, there is one, and they would put these really heartstring, gut-wrenching strings behind it, and I felt manipulated. And it's right. Really beautiful because then music can be manipulative. That's the power of it, is you can play something, and all of a sudden you're just crying. Or maybe, and so that person is actually trying to put their interpretation of whatever the text is. So yes. Like with Alan Watts, I felt like I wanted to hit the mute button. So with the Ram Dass thing, just to rewind a little bit, I had had Ram Dass and his teachings around me for most of my life. My father had Be Here Now around, and there are some books, and I even remember picking it up early, maybe in my early 20s, when I started getting into psychedelics and spirituality, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. There's a lot of talk about God and guru, and I was like, what the hell is this? Terrence McKenna made more sense to me. It was a little bit more there's something about it that was really easy to wrap my head around.
Sure.
And I had bought books over time. And then it wasn't until actually over the past couple years that just some experiences in life with psychedelics, with some ego-destroying psychedelic experiences I had, which we can go into. But for the most part, I came back around to Ram Dass teachings after having some very deep psychedelic spiritual experiences. And I was like, oh, it all comes back to love, and God is love, and it liberated the idea of God for me, and put the language of love and loving awareness back into everything. And it was almost like he handed me a map of this new realm, like a video game. Someone was like, here, take this map. Here's the map of love and your heart and everything. And then it really changed everything for me. And it was a beginning of a sort of unfolding. So I thought right away, I was like, I want to create something with this. That's the way that I just speak about these sort of spiritual experiences that I've had is through music. So I started reaching out to some friends and got in touch with them at the Ram Dass Foundation with Raghu and Rachel. And they like this idea. But I found the Imagine Meditation is actually from 1972, right after he came back to the United States, is what they told me. So there's something in his tone that was very, very special. So when I created that, I wanted to actually paint a picture of some of these spiritual transcendent experiences I had had. So it was really, for me, was almost like a diary piece or a piece of poetry about this place that I had been. But I also didn't want to have the music get in the way of it. So it was really meant to be like a room. It's just a container. Yeah. It's not trying to say anything too much, but it's also, ambient music is interesting because it can get real cheesy really easily. You can feel like you're going into a spa. And I love ambient spa music too. This is not, I do. I love it. I listen to it all the time. It's okay. But with this, I wanted to make something that was use the sort of sound design world that I have from working in the world of Glitch Mob after all these years and other projects, and something that felt like interesting and deep, but at the same time didn't take over the music. So a lot of that, actually, I would set up textures and then just play everything. So it was all done very, I just have the Ableton Push. I set it up. Everything's in C major, and I just sort of hit buttons and let the whole thing kind of unfold. And there's sounds of a fireplace in there that I recorded that I felt was calming. There's something about a fire that makes you feel like, oh, we're sitting around a fire. So there's a lot of really subtle things in there, yes. But really it was just about letting the Ram Dass vocals just do their thing and not really getting in the way.
It is perfect, man. It's just,
thank you.
By the way, not that the listening to guided meditation, it's great to have it, but somehow like suddenly this pairing of the meditation with this wonderful, I don't even call it an interpretation because it isn't. It's, I guess, a room is a great way to put it. It's like it does not get in the way of it at all. And yet the shifts in it with each moment, in this particular meditation, which up until I listened to your, I don't want to call it a version of it, but to listen to Imagine, I didn't really like that guided meditation. Mm. It like, there was something in it I could never connect to.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because it's this, you know, you're drawing in this being.
He has a particular tonality to it, it's true.
Yeah, but it was, to me, it's the idea of like, well, this is, I mean, again, the older I get, the more I realize, like, wow, I'm just, it's like, in my brain, it's just like a blistered pair of testicles. That I just keep kicking with my thoughts over and over.
Right.
It's like, why do I do this? It's
your brain has its own pair of testicles.
My brain has a pair of like testicles and pants that are too tight that keep getting kicked over and over again by my identity. It's a stupid relationship. It's like my brain is like an S&M dungeon sometimes. But So I don't even know why this would have bothered me, but because it's such a beautiful concept, which is that we sort of draw into our hearts the transcendent embodied in the form of the Buddha, Neem Karoli Baba, some being. And then through that, there is this like incredible, that guided meditation is such an incredible step-by-step guide to moving into the transcendent and also coming back here. That's the other beautiful thing about it, is he brings you out, way out, and then brings you back.
Yeah.
And somehow I just missed it until I heard your version of it. And then it's like, oh, right. Especially when he starts talking about love.
Yeah.
What was that sound you were using? What was the name of the synth, or what's the sonic replication of the concept of love?
That for me was something that it was very throwing spaghetti at the wall sort of process. And you know, I have tons of different plugins, and there's used Omnisphere on that a lot, which has a lot of really organic textures. And then there's this company called Output, which make this stuff for everything, has a lot of texture and motion and everything into it. So, and I have tons of field recordings that I've recorded over the years that all sort of mishmash in there. But I remember when I was doing the part with love, and also specifically the part when he's like, look at all the problems that yourself thinks it has. Yeah. I felt like, oh, that's such a nice thing just to say. And if you can really get there, it's so cathartic. But with love, it was really, I had set up set up a whole system in Ableton in the push with a whole palette of sounds. I had like 60 synths and sounds going in there.
Wow.
And I was actually just playing with my eyes closed, just riffing through. And when I heard that, I didn't even know what it was. It was just, I hit the sound right when he starts talking about love. And I felt like it was starting to sort of blossom. And
whoa.
Also, it's, yeah, I was picturing like flowers sort of opening up. And there are, I think there are six sections in there, but in the beginning, I thought of doing one sort of long ambient thing because that's typically how it's done. But then what I realized is almost like on a psychedelic trip, how you go through little realms.
Yeah.
Right. There's like you start off in the first bardo and then you move to this, then you move to that. And that's the interesting thing about a trip or meditation is that it's not one static place. So I wanted to make almost like six different little rooms or worlds that you pass through. So there's these sonic landscapes that mishmash together. So each one has a distinct section, and then there are pieces of them that sort of flow in each one together. But it came pretty naturally, but it took me about 6 months to write that. I mean, the first versions were awful. And I was going through my own process. I actually remember sending it to Raghu and Rachel, and they were like, yeah, we think this is going to be right, but it felt a little dark. Like I hadn't tapped into what love sounded like for me yet.
I'm sorry, I was not aware that there was an actual back and forth with Raghu. That's so cool. So this was collaborative.
It was, absolutely. I sent them the one early on. Although I would say that I sent them a couple back and forth, and they were like, "Yeah, this could be good. We can see what's happening." But then I went away and worked on it for a while. Then sent this back fully baked, and then Raghu actually called me and said, "Hey, we receive lots of music, and this feels like you really captured the vibe." So it all kind of came. I had probably seven versions of stuff that didn't quite feel right because I was just looking for the right thing. But yeah, they were great in the whole process and helped facilitate the whole thing.
That is wild, man. To like, doesn't that blow your mind to think that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think back to the little winks that you get from the guru or God or whatever you want to call it, the little like things in your
little
life.
Little universal ding.
Hello. Hello. And it's like out of the corner of your eye, there's Be Here Now. Or like out of the corner of your eye, there's a picture of Neem Karoli Baba. You know, I was just this, where did it go? That picture of Ram Dass over there.
Mm.
I've had that forever. And I was looking at it and then I realized like, oh shit, right above his head is a picture of Neem Karoli Baba. And I never saw it all the time. It was just right there. It's, you know.
Right.
But whenever I look back at the little breadcrumbs that are left here for us.
I love the idea of breadcrumbs.
It's cool,
isn't
it?
It's so cool.
It's like you're like, okay, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get lost as I can.
Yeah.
But can you please just leave a couple of like notes, love letters, a little, can you just leave here and there a little mark.
Just a little glow stick, just something.
Something to let me know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what the satsang is. And that's what Be Here Now is. And that's what the Bible is. And that's what any of the great poems are. And that's what music can be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel in your creative process that, do you ever feel this sense of resistance to becoming a missionary for that place? In other words, do you ever catch yourself thinking like, I want to leave breadcrumbs for other people who might be lost out here? And then right after that thought, you think, oh, what's wrong with you, man? You know, you're not a breadcrumb leaver. You're just here to have fun and make music.
Yes.
That doesn't mean you're the breadcrumbs.
Yes, I'm merely a court jester.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing about creating music is that there are times where you want to actually say something through it. And I think, you know, for Glitch Mob in particular, you know, we have a message. There's something in the music. I mean, it's hard to articulate what it actually is, but we leave breadcrumbs. There's a lot of stuff in the song titles, but it's obfuscated. It's not really clear. So I think that's the coolest thing about music. You know, like for instance, there's this one song on the record, Take Me With You. And on our Glitch Mob's last album called See Without Eyes, which is also a sort of a reference to what we're talking about. But I remember the first time we played it for someone. And to me, this was a super hopeful, beautiful, cheerful sort of song. And someone heard it and they're like, wow, the song's so fucking depressing. It's like, And I thought, but that's the coolest thing about it is Whoa. when it's abstract enough, it allows people to have their own experience with it. And we're not saying that this is happy or sad or anything. It just sort of is. And I remember that's the power of music. So I think the best stuff happens when we put ourselves into it and we're just as authentic as possible and then let the pieces sort of fall where they may. But we do leave, there's some hidden poems in the album. The album titles have stuff, you know, there's some references to Ram Dass, there's references to Thich Nhat Hanh in there, but we let sort of people unfold it. But if they also don't, if they aren't into it, or maybe they never see it, that's okay too. But it is true that, you know, when you have an incredible transformative experience, whether it's with psychedelics or hiking or anything, you want to proselytize and you want everyone to feel it too. I mean, that was the first thing I felt when I actually went to go spend time with Ram Dass in Maui and talking to him. The look in his eyes and the feeling I felt, I was in there in the room talking with him for 2 hours. And I left being like, I want everyone to feel this thing.
Yeah.
I want to do everything I can to spread this love. And of course you come back down from that experience and go back to life. Then you go to the airport and everything, but you can still have that there. But it is true that there's something, all your ego wants to say things and create a narrative, but really it's all about just in the being of that love and creating from that place that I think is actually enough.
Wow. Yeah. Right. Well, I think what you just described is, skillful means, you know,
right.
So it's like, here's this very important thing, yeah. You know, we have to reduce it to the material universe because that's where we're at. So you end up with these like hilarious examples of it. I think one I heard was, fuck it, I'll just make up my own. But it's like, you know, like so bomb squad, right? You've got a bomb squad, you got somebody, a bomb technician, and he's on the phone with some guy who's far away, but safe. And this guy far away, he's got to talk to the bomb squad technician in a way that doesn't make it seem like he's scared at all.
Right.
He's got to seem just completely calm. And he's got to understand perfectly understand the psyche of the technician, you know, so that he doesn't like in any way, shape or form add to the stress
right.
that's already happening in the deactivation of this terrible bomb.
Right.
Right.
So just first things first, whatever you do, not touch the black wire.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. You can't be like, yeah, exactly. You can't be like, one thing you wouldn't want to say to someone deactivating a bomb is, I love you, John. I just want you to know that, man. When you're gone, I'm going to remember you. I'm going to take flowers to your grave. You're going to be, if you get, listen, I guess one good thing about this is we're not going to need a coffin because you're going to be exploding to hamburger bits. We could put you in a bag. Like, there's all kinds of things you don't want to say to someone deactivating a bomb, right? And then there's all kinds of, there's ways that you could communicate to a person in some pure technical way, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
We're going to deactivate this bomb.
Yeah.
And I already know you've deactivated it.
Right.
It's in your voice. You can hear it. I know you've deactivated it. Like, it's there. And so the person working and the person talking to him, explaining about the deactivation process, almost merge and become the same being.
That's right.
Somehow. And in that moment...
love that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's skillful means, right? Which is that here we are in this fucking place, which is, on one level, party land. We got margaritas. We got fucking, you know what I mean?
Nachos,
dude. Yeah. And football on the beach. And we got fire. It's awesome. Yeah. It's party land. We got balloons that's here, right. baby. Clowns and bouncy houses.
Puppies. Sex.
Orgies. Fucking the orgy tent. And we got the... And it's true. On one level, that's all happening. And it is. It's all there. It's all there. On another level, we're deactivating a bomb.
Right.
And the bomb is our karma. And the teachers are the ones who are like... The great teachers are the ones who are teaching you how to deactivate the bomb. But simultaneously, you feel like you're at the beach.
Right. You're deactivating the bomb when you're in the airport and there's something happening that you don't like. And then there it is. It's all unfolding in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And so learning how to do that seems to be part of what it is to be in this realm. It's like the teachers not only to transmit the bomb deactivation technique and help you deactivate your own bomb, but simultaneously you can find yourself helping other people deactivate their bombs.
Right.
Right.
That's what we were just talking about just before we started recording. Was one of the things was when you come in contact with a teacher that resonates with you in a certain way. We were talking about in that other realm of pure consciousness, going there and seeing. For me, I had a connection with a friend of mine, this artist named Andrew Jones. And this is, I don't actually know if I've ever told him this before, but Andrew, if you're listening, I had an experience.
Also known as Android Jones.
Android Jones, yes. I had a high dose psilocybin experience where I totally left and went to the other side, and I was by myself, and it was very, very transformative and beautiful. And when I went through some difficulty to get there, when I went to the other side, I saw some friends of mine. We were talking about this place, sort of like this festival of teachers on the other side, of these guides that are like, oh, hey, oh, you're here. Hey, how's it going? For me, I saw Ram Dass. I saw Android Jones. I saw my friend Jonathan, who we've sort of been on the spiritual path together, but someone who is creating from that place and sort of creating rabbit holes back down to this place or back down to other teachers in their own way. And that I felt like I had received the message also that there is no one right way, that this all makes sense for us, but there are many different ways up the hill.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And that's the other thing, is like every bomb technician, you know, there's teachings for every bomb.
That's right.
And there's technicians.
They have their own instruction manual, their own set of cables.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And but you know, you can't walk around. It's like nobody wants to. Who, like, if I'm at the beach and I'm hanging out with somebody who's looking around, all he sees is people about to get blown up.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to be at the beach with that dude.
Definitely.
Get the fuck out of here.
No way.
Because that's not my. That's, those types of teachers aren't for us.
Yeah.
But maybe for some people there is that you know, severity of, and there is that version of it, which is, do you not see? Yes. Are you not aware that death sits upon your shoulder? That at any moment your cognitive faculties could begin to become impaired, and your ability to have this mind, this lucidity, could be lost in a second. This is all you have now. Shut up! Fuck you! I don't care. Right? That's for us isn't the way, but for some people that is the way, and that way is converted into, you know, when we see it through in Christianity, it's like this is the kingdom of good and evil, sin.
That's right. Polarizing.
You must accept Jesus Christ in your heart right now, or you will die,
or else,
and burn forever in hell.
Yeah.
Right. That's a severe teaching, and that kind of teaching I've never, like, that's like, to me, that's like, if I'm deactivating a bomb, the last thing I need is for someone to like suddenly put a gun to my
head. Yeah. To lean over your shoulder and say, don't fuck this up, buddy.
You know, after the bomb explodes, you're going to burn forever.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, Jesus Christ, I'm already getting exploded. Anyway, I think I'm fucking the metaphor. I don't even know what I'm talking about now. But the point is, there's many different teachers, and many different paths. But the paths and the teachers are all leading to this place.
Yes.
Or maybe another way to say it, a placeless place.
Right.
How would you describe this place? What is it? And what is it?
I think that it's the divine grand mystery that maybe we don't actually even know, but we can subjectively experience it. And I was reading this book called Sacred Knowledge by William Richards, which described the difference between a spiritual and a mystical experience. And a spiritual experience is when your ego is still intact, or there's a sense of self and an object. And mystical is when you actually merge and become that thing. And this is an incredible book. I highly, highly recommend it. But for me, it was the actual merging with that thing or that place that felt very, very familiar. And people can have this without psychedelics. I mean, this is just the way that I've done it. For me, I think I needed to have that. I just needed to be clobbered over the head with love and oneness to really understand. It was the combination of the meditation and the psychedelics. And I think it's also important to say that it was very different for me doing this outside of the sort of the party and the music world. I don't mean taking psychedelics at Burning Man or at festivals. That's just, and that's not, also not to speak poorly of that. That's just a different thing entirely. It's a whole different place versus doing it in a more sort of sacramental way. So for me, it was actually merging with that and feeling something deep inside my own subjective experience that felt like my true nature, was something that I was understanding, not intellectually from reading a book, but I felt like I was becoming that pure love. And that's actually the place that I was creating from this whole time. And it's the place that when you're there, there's nothing to do. You're fine just how you are. And knowing that, and then coming back into the intellectual world of reading books and teachings and everything, that place made perfect sense to me, in that that's where music comes from. That's where love comes from. That's where, I mean, all of these things that we do come from there. But it's interesting because there's something about the familiarity there. When you're there, you think, oh gosh, it's so nice to come back here again.
Yeah.
And we're all going to go back here. Now we just get to come back to Earth and have fun.
Yeah, right. That's it. That is the other side of it. It's just that I always run that thing you just described. And I, you know, you see, when you're with Ram Dass,
yes,
it's like he's a window to that place.
He mirrors that back to you. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And so you're around him.
Oh yeah.
It's so cool. And then, but then, you know, here, man, this is the place of tangled wires, you know, like for me, I almost wanted to leave it for you, 'cause you're a music producer. I wanted to, before you came, I was ashamed. You're looking at this musical setup. You don't even know what I did. To prepare for your coming, I untangled so many wires, 'cause I'm like, fucking Beretta's coming. I gotta he can't see all these tangled wires around. And so you know, here things get really complex and tangled and you get lost in the tangle. And over there, it's just perfect and simple. And when you're lost in the tangle, it's so easy to forget that this is a place where, for lack of a better word, we're here to have fun.
Right.
Whenever a parent has passed for me, the feeling as they dissolve into the bardo, or however you want to put it, that comes in is always, enjoy. This place is for you.
Yes.
Like, this is your place.
Wow. I have that exact same download from my father, actually, after he passed as well.
What, can you describe that to me?
Yeah. I had an experience where, this was much later on in life, I was probably early to mid 20s, and I had just started experimenting with psychedelics, and I was on a fairly heavy dose of LSD, and it could have gone totally sideways, 'cause I was just at some guy's house on New Year's, but it ended up going great. And I had that download actually of, hey, like, this is for you. Enjoy it. I actually kind of got cut off and had to leave early, but like, enjoy it, take care of your family, have fun. It's beautiful. And I saw the rest of my lifespan in the form of this sort of like little pool of light that you get to experience and then share that with others.
Oh, wow. God, that's beautiful, man. Yeah. That is so sweet. And to have that feeling of relief.
Yeah.
Knowing, because I was untangling cords, listening to Imagine.
That's awesome. You know? That's perfect.
There's a point in Imagine at the very beginning where he's like, you know, find a place where you can sit. He's like explaining the meditative pose. And I'm like, boy, this is the story of my fucking life. Right. Ram Dass talking about just meditating. Here I am with a bunch of cords on my bed trying to untangle.
Life is fucking. That reminds me of that book title, Jack Kornfield, After the Ecstasy, The Laundry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, we can go off and have these crazy experiences, but the real practice is untangling a big ball of fucking cords.
Yeah.
Or like going to the grocery store or driving around in traffic.
You know?
And not getting angry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What I've learned from Ram Dass and what I've learned from these retreats is the word learned is wrong, isn't it? Mm. It's not really learned. And that's why I love the title of one of his books, Polishing the Mirror.
That's right.
Right? And because, and also I love that it sort of brings us back to when you're playing this song for someone and they're like, God, this is so depressing. and you realize like, oh shit, you know, my music is a reflection of this person's depression.
Yeah.
You know, right? This person, this person's mirror has a nice coat of depression
right
over it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And so the learning thing, even though that's you know, it's really, learning seems to be kind of the wrong word for it, as much as like, all right, okay. We're going to start doing a little windshield scrubbing here, so right. to speak. We're going to try to get this, like, you've been on the highway for a long, you know, like when you pull off.
Yes.
Yeah. When you've been on a long road trip and you like,
bugs.
There's fucking bugs and just black shit. And do you believe that the guru sees through that into the light behind it?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and that, what you make me think of right there, and I love the idea of not learning. And one of the things about the Ram Dass teachings for me and other sort of Buddhist texts was that I thought that, like, I'm this flawed, silly human here, and I have to learn and take these spiritual teachings, or at least that's just sort of what I learned growing up. But really, polishing the mirror, or just the idea of, no, actually, this is all in you, and you're there all the time, and you're perfect as is, and now we're just sort of scrubbing the guts of life off of our psychic windshield.
Yeah. We've smashed into the guts of life.
That's right. But I have to say, though, I think the humor is really important too, and that's when I really connected with your show, and that's something that I really love about what you do, and also with connecting with the Ram Dass community and other, even like when you listen to Dalai Lama speak, like, he's funny,
and
it's easy to take ourselves so fucking seriously.
Yeah.
But the mixture of having the word, what's the Pali word? I think it's Lila or something like that.
Lila.
Lila. Cosmic humor about the whole thing. Then everything really starts to make sense, because you just have to be able to laugh it off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is like, I was I'm going to keep referring to books, because I was like, I don't even know what this, you've been putting your stacks of books you read every year on some, what is that? Medium?
Oh yeah. On Medium. And I did it on Instagram post.
It's freaking cool, man. But you, like, I was looking like, whoa, we read a lot of the same stuff. But, I thank God someone, I think through Twitter, Patreon, someone like sent me a link to Jaron Lanier, and somehow I missed him altogether. I don't even know how.
Oh, he's incredible.
So I ordered his book because it looks really cool. The beginning of the new, what's it called? The beginning of the new everything?
Yeah, Dawn of the New
Everything. Dawn of the New Everything.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Whoa. Like, this guy is like, what is this guy?
Yeah, he's a techno guru for sure.
Techno guru is a great way to put it. But he, as he's describing all these various, he's defining VR in all these different ways throughout the book. And one of the ways he defines virtual reality was mystical, in the sense that here you are of sentience in the virtual reality world, but, you know, you can be a tree.
Right.
Or you can be nothing. And here you are looking around with no body to... he doesn't describe it in this exact way, but the point is, like, within that, you truly get the experience of not being your avatar.
That's right. You're trying on different orbs of consciousness, and that's the whole thing, is with virtual reality, it's a whole fully baked consciousness that you can then get into and experience from a different way, or at least that's what he says is the ultimate goal, or the best version of what VR can actually be.
Yeah, that. And I don't remember what it was. Like, oh, I mean, this is a little like salacious, but I can remember having VR goggles on. Have you ever had sex in VR?
I have not.
So it's really interesting, because like, you can put VR goggles on.
Whoa.
I think I was in, God, what's that Adobe paintbrush program they have? It's called Tilt Brush.
Oh, Tilt Brush. Oh yeah, the Google one.
Yeah. So it wasn't like I was looking at like VR porn or anything. It's in Tilt Brush, you know? And it's like, so you have this thing happening to you, which is like, one of the most amazing, super hyper sensual things that can happen. But in the tilt brush land,
you're just painting.
Fuck painting. Like, I think I put the controllers down.
Right.
You know, you're just like in this, surrounded by this like vast expanse, and there's not really a you there. And yet there's this incredible feeling happening.
Whoa.
Right. Yeah.
I have to try this.
Yeah, you must. I'm diving back into VR after reading this wonderful book, but I've been sort of out of that world for a little bit, so I don't know where it's at right now as far as these kinds of experiments. But it reminds me of what you're saying, which is like, if we get too caught up in the cords here,
yeah,
you know, in this like incredible experience we're having, it's incredibly sensual here, you know, like, you don't have to be getting a blowjob to like feel like, it's like you're always getting a blowjob.
Right.
Like, we're like
all the time.
What is the plural of clitoris?
A clitori?
Is it clitori?
I don't know, but let's just say that it is.
So fine. Clitori. So we're like interdimensional clitori, like, you know, pushing into this realm, right? And like, no matter what is touching us, it's like the most powerful experience ever, yes. You know, to the point where we have to build up filters and filtration mechanisms to block this
to
stuff
not
up.
Have orgasms all the time.
All the time. Yeah, right.
And, awful.
And we have all kinds of orgasms here. Like, everyone, like, the most obvious orgasm is the one, like, where, like, cum comes out of you, or like your vagina trembles and you get wet and you tremble. But like, there's all kinds of other versions of this,
yeah,
right? That, which is like, sometimes you'll be in the shower and a thought will come into your mind and you're like, whoa, that's a great thought. Or yeah, sometimes you'll like be at a party, you know, when a party like hits its peak. You know, yeah, the peak party, yeah, that thing.
I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, that. The yeah, peak of the festival, where suddenly you're like in a hive of bees or something, and the sound of the entire thing is somehow all merging to everyone's like...
Peak experience.
Yeah.
Hive mind, yeah.
Yeah, that. There's all these other forms of orgasm that are happening here, but the point is, if we get too caught up in being a clitoris, right... Yes. Then suddenly it becomes like unbearably rotten. It can become like terrifying. Like, you wouldn't look. I honestly have no idea what I have yet. I think maybe in my DNA it could be in there, but I don't know what it's like to have a clitoris. But my wife and I were up in Big Sur, and we were on this hike, and I was looking at all these holes in trees. And I just watched Creep Show, where this guy like buries this couple up to their neck, oh, yeah, and like this. And I was thinking, like, man, what a great Creep Show, where some like angry guy takes another guy who he's jealous of or whatever, and like makes him put his dick into stumps until something bites it.
Wow.
worst thing to be in the woods. That. Someone's got a gun. He's like, put your dick in that stump. Anyway, the point torture. Is, we're like that. In the sense that we've been pushed out of the transcendent into this temporary material realm.
Yeah.
And if we forget that there is an attachment to something or a connection to something vastly bigger than us, then we're just a fucking dick in a stump, man.
Yes.
It's terrifying, right?
It is terrifying.
I'm sorry to vulgarize the beauty of you, man. I'm sorry, dude. This is what I'm so sorry. My mind converts everything into this rotten way. Forgive me. It's vulgar.
No, that's it. But you know what? I think humor is so important, because it is so easy to overthink and overanalyze these things. And I think, you know, sometimes you can be a beautiful, transcendent butterfly of love and bliss, and sometimes it's just a dick in a stump. And you know, that life just presents all sorts of different things, and that's really okay. But I do think that having those little reminders in some way, and I think
yeah,
for me, and this makes me think of there's this meditation book that I just read called Altered States and Altered Traits, something like that, by Daniel Goleman. But I just love the idea that altered states become altered traits, and the more time that you Whoa. Spend in a particular state, it'll start to become sticky. Or they talk about that in Stealing Fire too, where if you want to have more creative flow states, you spend more time in creative flow, so therefore it becomes Whoa. Easier, like a muscle. And the more time that I've spent in these meditative states, the easier it is to go back there. When I very first started meditating, I was doing TM, and it was really, meditation was just, I would get on my pillow for 20 minutes and then I'll go about my day. But it wasn't until doing a Vipassana silent retreat that I realized that actually it's all meditation, and everything is a way back into that, the umbilical cord to transcendent union. And it's not just actually the sort of exalted pillow, but in the moment it's everything. And especially when stuff gets tough,
yeah,
that's when it's, the work really starts to show up. And for me, and when it really starts to pay off is when it's, and it's not, I think I had this wrong idea that doing spiritual work or doing personal work meant that this stuff wouldn't happen to you anymore, but it's not. For me, it's more of like, you're still going to get angry. You're going to get sad frustrated, but it's when you catch yourself and then you don't judge yourself for doing it, or at least you catch yourself judging yourself, and then the time that it comes back will start to get quicker, but you don't actually just transform into some butterfly clitoris flying through the horizon.
Whoa, I've seen those, man. But you're right. That thing is hilarious. I used to do that. That's a very funny thing. That's like, that thing you're describing, that's the way I used to, honest to God, there was a time in my life where I walked into a gym and I thought to myself, I don't want to get too ripped. And I meant it. I meant it like, oh yeah, man, I better be careful. I don't want to get too fucking muscular, man. Yeah. Like, really?
Yeah.
Totally. Oh yeah, watch out, dude. That's not, is that really something you think is going to happen from your intermittent gym experiences that you're just going to sprout a six pack or like, don't worry, you're okay.
Yeah.
You have nothing. So, you know, the same is true for the way many people, me, the way I have thought about meditation in the past has been like, well, better, don't want to get enlightened right away.
I know. I should take it slow on the path to enlightenment.
Don't want to fuck up the podcast, you know? Like, I mean, I could probably get enlightened tomorrow, but I don't want to, like...
I know. If I become too woke, then things just get all weird.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of like to hang out here, you know, right before getting enlightened. That kind of ego shit is so funny. Which is... And man, I really love this, like, the teaching that Ram Dass so clearly articulates, which is that it's not like the terminology that I have used and I still use, because it's hard not to use it, is I'll say over there, the other place, the other side, the behind the veil, whatever you want to say, like heaven, the astral realm, or all of these things are based in time and space. And so and the way we understand things here is we're localized in our bodies because we are caught in the sort of atomic mesh that is our human incarnation. And so we have to think in terms of like, well, there's a door and behind the door is a yard and behind the yard's a thing. And that's how we think.
That's our map. Yeah.
That's our map. So right now there's someone in Tokyo, right? And I'm not in Tokyo, and like, we're all separate, you know?
Right.
So that's how we think here. And so we use terms over there, but the way Ram Dass talks about it, which I really love, is that no, that we're protruding. He doesn't use these, but it's the idea that we're protruding into time.
Mm.
Right. And so to say we're over there or there over there is actually sort of to use a terminology based on this place, which is like, oh no, we're there right now.
Right.
It's all happening right now. This is it. You're in it.
This is it.
You're in the grand festival.
That's right.
You're with Andrew Jones. Yeah. You're with Ram Dass. You're with Jesus. You're with Neem Karoli Baba. You're with, but not only that, that meditation is so beautiful that you put music to, because there is an invitation in there to, what is the, do you remember the Sanskrit, the mantra that you say, which is?
Yes. I excuse me. I can't recite it, but yeah, and sort of in the beginning, it's
the, I am that. I am that. That I am, or that's me
I am
too.
And that is me too. Something like that.
Yeah. Do you remember what it was? The
Aphrodiam, something like that.
It's a beautiful. Anyway, guys, listen to it. This is I'm listening to this beautiful mantra, which means that's me too. So Ram Dass is saying, summon up any event from history.
Right.
That's me too. Right. I am all of this. Right. And, what's funny is when I heard the Sanskrit version of it, I'm like, I'm going to remember. That's my new mantra.
Yeah.
I'm going to chant that forever. That's beautiful. It sounds so beautiful. And then as soon as the thing's over, I'm like, wait, what was that?
I know, totally. I mean, I listened to it 100 times and I can't even remember it right now.
That's what it is to be. That's what it is to be in meat, man. We it's very clumsy over here. But the idea, the concept behind it is so beautiful in that it is an invitation to embrace all of it. The clumsiness, the forgetfulness, yes. The all, the anger.
Embrace all of it.
All of it. So when we get angry, the difference is, it's not as though suddenly you're like never angry again.
You just go, oh, you're angry. Oh, that's yeah. It's okay. Yeah. That must be hard to be angry.
That's part of me, man. I get angry. Oh, yeah. That's part of me. Whoa, look at that. I get jealous. Whoa, look at that. I get scared. Look at that. Oh wow. That this part of me is a hypocrite, or that part of me doesn't walk. All of it is you.
Right. And then I think, you realize that you have this inner judge and you have this fear because it's actually there to protect you. It's there to protect you from saber-toothed tigers coming and running up and eating you or whatever.
Which happened to my neighbor 2 days ago.
That's brutal in Echo Park.
Yeah. It's fucking horrible right now. The saber-toothed tiger population here, they started off with this like...
I know it's ballooned recently.
Well, and they introduced them back into the ecosystem, you know? I don't think they should have done that. They're like, they used to be here, and then they brought them back, and now they're rampaging through the neighborhood.
I know, it's really sad. I mean, climate change is really, it's really been affecting all the tiger population.
I know, but it sucks. But you're right, it's there to keep us safe, right?
That's
right. It's there to protect us from these dangers that we perceive.
That's right. And I think that having a relationship with your fear and with your judgment. And for me, that's what the whole musical process is all about and creating music and listening to music. I mean, actually, ultimately, music has done so much for me to help me with that. Even if you get rid of all of this sort of woo-woo stuff we're talking about, even if music just lets you know that someone else has felt this particular thing, because it's such an emotional... it's like, I think of it as HD emotional communication, whereas we can say to someone, I love you, or I feel what you're feeling, but really music, like you feel that is packaged. It's a time capsule of emotion over time. And music has gotten me through some really tough moments. And that's one of the reasons when I tap back into why we're making music is to maybe, if this creation does that for someone else on some level, then great. Then I'm happy just for one other person, you know?
I want to talk about this. This makes me remember something. We went out to dinner and you told me something that really changed my life. Mm-hmm. And you had just come back from, were in Maui and you had gotten to hang out with Ram Dass for a little bit. And I'm just going to start it off. But you were telling Ram Dass this about how you send love out into your fans.
That's right.
And can you tell that story again?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's right. So when I went to Maui, Glitch Mob had gone there for to do a project to shoot some photos for an upcoming album, and it just so happened that you and I had just become friends, and I wanted to go see and just have a chance to talk with him. And when I went there, one of the first things he asked, he's like, I think all he knew about me was that I do music. And he said, so tell me about your music. And I said, well, it's electronic music. And he was like, yeah, I like electronic music. And he asked me tell me what your process is. I don't remember the specific question. But something that we do in Glitch Mob, and what I said to him was that we sort of, we soak up all of the love from people, whether people write us notes or at the shows, we give high fives, and then we send it back out in the form of music, almost like we're this machine that turns love into music. Yeah. And as I was saying this, he stopped me, and I remember just the look in his eyes. He was like, oh, you catch that? Hold on. That was your ego. Your ego acts and sends and has to actually do something with love. You're in your ego right now. Your soul just is that, and you act from that place of being love.
Yeah.
And that's where the real magic is.
Man, I'll never forget that conversation. That is such an easy thing to forget.
And that was a huge moment for me too. I mean, I think about that almost every day on some level, that it's such an easy switch to think that you have to actually do and act But really, and when he says the soul, some people think of it, maybe it's a soul that lives on beyond, or maybe not. But really, for me, it's sort of like he's talking about our true self of just being the pure love down below there. Yeah. And the fact that even in my whole narrative and the story that I have about my musical path, that I feel like there's something to actually do there, but really deep down below, you're getting below, like you were saying, behind the veil. We're actually all there all the time.
Yeah. And that, to me, that shift, mm-hmm. that letting go of being I used to have it, man. My mom, when I was a kid, I vaguely remember, like, my mom attached one of those, like, bullshit steering wheels to the side that you give to kids. You know those?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the little...
And the kid will, like spin the wheel and pretend he or she's driving. Right. But, like, no, it's like... And you can actually trick your... I can remember, like, you know, going by a Toys R Us, you know, or a toy store... Some place I wanted to go and like spin.
Yeah, like it's not working.
What the fuck? The wheel's fucked up. What's going on here?
Yeah.
And it's like you're all pissed off because the wheel didn't work. You know, you're a kid. You're like, you know, you're in your imagining mind. And then like every once in a while, when you spin the wheel the right way, the car does turn that way. You're like, oh yeah, holy shit, I'm doing it, right?
Yeah.
And so to realize, wait, you know, I don't think I think this whole life has just been an artificial steering wheel that I've been pretending to spin around.
That's actually the best metaphor for life that I've heard. Oh. I love that.
It's because it's simultaneously like a relief.
It is. That's like, relax. Nothing is under control. You can.
But then also there's a feeling of like, wait a minute, I earned this. You know what I mean? You want to feel that sense of like, this is, to me, we're running into this big problem with society, which is that, with the world, which is that, and you know, it's really the Pentagon, I think they just invested, I can't remember how much, 2 billion or 4 billion into artificial intelligence research. Google, Apple, all the great corporations so essentially what's happened here is all the great corporations and all the kings and all the states have in some way or another gotten into this really amazing race, which is to be the first person to channel a sentient AI into this dimension. Because once you do that and you pair a thinking mind with the computational power of a machine, then you will be able, and they're already using it, you know, but, and it's so funny that, I don't know if you saw the Apple keynote speech that mm-hmm. was yesterday. Did you watch that?
Yeah.
It's so funny because it's like the AI right now is like making it so you can have like a trunk on your nose. Which, yes, by the way, today is Ganesha's birthday.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ganesha's appearance day. But
happy birthday,
Ganpati. But the AI is doing that right now for us. Or the AI is like going to scan your face and so that you can, your phone turns on and. That's where we're at with it right now, but where it leads invariably is automation. You know, it's all forms of automation. Formerly, if you wanted to make it seem like an elephant trunk was stuck to your face, you would have to there would have to have other people around you, like doing, you know, controlling it. And like, it would be a very complex thing. Now the AI is doing it. And so what this is going to lead us to, or one path for the entire species, is that suddenly we aren't going to have to do anything anymore. The cars are going to drive themselves. Mm-hmm. The music's going to make itself. The comedy's going to make itself. The art's going to make itself. The food's going to make itself. The house is going to clean itself. Everything's going to do it on its own. Just like the way nature already does. It's going to, that same wave of harmonious doing itselfness is going to somehow possess matter. And now as human beings, we've all... complete, like when you go up to someone, you're like, so what do?
Right.
That's how you define, I am this. I fly, I'm a pilot.
Right.
That's, oh, really? So now one of the fundamental ways that we define ourselves, which is through our work, is going to that's going to start going away. And so it's interesting because it seems like as a being begins to wake up, the being begins to realize, I don't know how much of this I don't think I'm doing any. Oh, I don't even know if that I'm an I. Right. Yeah. And simultaneously, it seems like because of technology, this is going to happen to us as a species, which is we're going to realize like, oh shit, actually that thing we thought defined us as a species, which is our ability to like use tools and make stuff.
Do anything.
Is going to suddenly no longer, we're not going to have to do it. Now what?
Now what?
Now what?
Yeah. That reminds me, actually, I saw I went to a music tech demo, I think a year or two ago. And it was the first time because I had read all of the stuff about AI and the AI is coming for different jobs and for automation. And this was the first time I had seen a music AI do something that was actually compelling. And I felt it. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
It's coming for us. Yeah. But really, there's an AI service which exists now. I forgot the name of it. But you can go on and will basically score a commercial. So you can say... You click a button here and you say that I want this to be hopeful, and then it goes to cheerful, and then the guy actually scored a football commercial in 30 seconds, whereas before it would have taken a composer many, many hours, days to write this whole thing. Yeah. He just clicked a bunch of different emotions, and this isn't actually just putting together other songs. It's actually that the AI has the ability to, it knows what's happening in the video, it can speed up or slow things down and actually write music from scratch.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I felt that, you know, at some point we think, and I want to sort of be a humanist. I mean, I want to think that there's something special about us. Like, will AI ever replace, let's say, a band or a podcaster or a painter? Is there something actually special about what we do? And I think people can romanticize it. And now if you want to be a humanist, and he talks about that in Homo Deus a lot in Yuval Harari's book, which I've read twice. It's he goes super deep into this, and I think I want to be romantic and say that, but it's there's no possible way we could fathom what things are going to look like in 500 years, and maybe people will actually prefer to see some sort of artificial intelligence band play or hear a podcast. Yeah. that is perfect. I mean, who's actually to say? But one of the things that he talks about in Dawn of the New Everything in the Jaron Lanier book, which is really interesting, is like, the perfect version of all this technology is that it actually just brings us back to ourselves. It's not actually about VR. I mean, yes, VR can do all these things, but what does it actually say about our own experience?
That's it.
And how does it actually inform us to be better people and live and enjoy life more? And, you know, the AI hasn't come in and taken over yet, but while we still have our jobs here, how can we actually learn to appreciate it a bit more from having to think philosophically about what we actually do here?
That's right, man. It's a teacher. And this whole, like, our reaction to the incoming AI is exactly what a monkey descendant would do, which is like, it's going to take my bananas.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's a fucking thing. It's going to steal our bananas. Don't you see it? Don't you guys know it's going to kill us and steal our bananas?
That's right.
Yeah. And that is us applying to the AI our own paranoia and fear. The AI at that point has become a reflection of our special paranoia and our fear of saber-toothed tigers. And that's what we're seeing, I think, in many of the prognostications. And also, yeah, though, you know, is the problem is it's true, right? Because the problem is, like, we're dealing with, like, in between... And I know, again, using time-space continuum language, in between the here and the there, the clear light, the where we are right now, mm-hmm. the state of the monad, the unified consciousness, there is the bardo. And there are, you know, I remember someone asked the Dalai Lama about this. Like, what about, like, I can't remember if they were saying aliens or entities or spirits. And he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. There are. But these things, just like us, they die. They experience old age, disease, death. They're impermanent, just like us. And yet the totality, the sum total of that thing, the ground of being, that's when we let go, that's what we are. So I think the AI is going to be a channel of that. But in between here and there, there's a lot of little things that can get into the system.
Yes, there's a lot of snags that can happen.
Yeah.
I was watching Elon Musk on Joe Rogan the other day, and he was saying how he actually thinks it's going to be people using it against each other. That's going to be the real problem, and not necessarily the sort of Skynet version of them coming and just attacking us, but really coming down to country versus country, or corporation versus corporation,
driving us mad.
Yeah. And I guess, and it's funny too, because to not go totally crazy and short circuit, my mind goes to, well, how can, as an artist, how can I use this to create more love and more art? And there's, yes. I mean, to think about, it's easy to be dystopian, and sure, it's like, it comes back to like, okay, here we are diffusing a bomb again. Maybe the bomb is made from a neural network, but really, I think all we can really do, at least for me, in the way that I think of it, is just to create more, yes. and to create more ways back to it and from it. So I think I'm excited for what AI can bring to the artist's toolkit. I don't think it's going to, at least anytime soon, get rid of the creative roles, but I think it's going to greatly enhance. I mean, imagine if you took an iPhone XS Max and showed it to someone 1,000 years ago and showed them that this is where things are going. Imagine how crazy.
I know what they would have said. They'd be like, why did you fucking call it Max? They're going to be like, "You wait, can I see a dictionary?
Yes. Hold on.
Hold on. Let me look. I just want to look. Wait. There's so many other words you can use besides Max.
Also XS. XS?
XS Max?
Oh, it's 10.
Wait, but it's like the fact that they named the goddamn thing XS Max. Like some kind of commentary on capitalism or some kind of, like, it really feels like this is like an, what, that can't be accidental.
Right.
You're like, if maximum excess, here you go. Do you want it? The maximum, boom. There you have $1,000 phone.
Yeah.
That's like only slightly better than your other phone. You definitely don't have maximum excess. That's what we'll call it. Yeah, we did it. It's so funny to me.
The irony is just too, it's too good.
It wasn't accidental. It couldn't have been. Apple must be like somehow aware of the fact that like they've messed up and they've already made tools that are better than anything we'll ever possibly need. And anything after that is just like, just icing on icing. But I know you're saying, holy God in heaven, this, the technology, the ability to create that we have around us right now is so amazing. But what you said just now is, if there, and God forgive me for saying this, because whenever you say it, you're like, you're always wrong, but I'm going to say it. I'm always wrong anyway. What you just said is the answer to the problem, if you ask me, which is like, sure. You know, like, for example, let's imagine I had a trumpet here, right? Just a trumpet, a simple trumpet. That's a bludgeoning device. If you wanted to, you could probably pick it up and like use that to just fucking smash my skull in.
You could hold up a bank with a trumpet.
Yeah, you could. You could just, all you have to do is like blong the fucking security guard in the head with it. And then like, it's, you know, it's got to be made of something pretty. Maybe you needed to sharpen up the edges.
Titanium or something.
Yeah. But
still, it could happen.
Yeah. And, or if you wanted to, you could walk into a bank with a trumpet and play a really beautiful song, really quick. You know, maybe like, you know, I don't know why I used a fucking trumpet for this example. There's a lot of other cooler instruments that are less like.
I love the trumpet, but maybe a harp.
A harp, or, exactly. Yeah, right. A harp. You could beat someone to death with it, or you can play beautiful music on it. And it's and the answer to the fear prognosticators when it comes to AI or anything for that matter that's coming down the pipes is, when it comes, if I can, I'm going to use it for love. I'm going to use it as an expression of the love in me, the love that I am. And that's what I'll do. And if in that process,
I love that,
it eats me up, all right.
That's okay. And that's just part of it. Excuse me. And that's what these new technologies do. And I think it's easy to become scared and get caught in the outrage fear machine of everything that's coming. And certainly there's something to be scared of if you want to look at it like that. But I think of AI and all of this, these new emerging technologies, like an industrial revolution when cars came around. I mean, certainly, you know, they didn't have seatbelts in cars for many years and lots of people have died in car accidents, but also we could just decide to drive to Mexico right now. That's pretty cool. So there's a lot of good and bad things that have happened from this new technology. And I think AI is going to be the same thing. Like people will probably die or become become cyborgs. I mean, in a way, that's what Jaron Lanier talks about in his, and actually in the new book, it's something like 10 reasons to delete your social media accounts now. And his argument is actually that the AI is fucking here. Yeah. It's already here and we are already wrapped up in it. It doesn't look like a robot, but actually the algorithmic addiction that we all have to social media is the very first emergence of the sort of intelligence that we are all in this sort of psychological test box all the time, wanting to
Skinner box.
The Skinner box. That's right. We are now in an invisible Skinner box. And I think that what he's trying to do is just sort of sound the alarm before it gets too late. But at the same time, you know, I think it's easy to look at everything through a dystopian lens. But if we can actually just come back to a place of creation instead of sitting around and wringing our hands.
That's what the machines wanted you to say.
That's right.
That's the thing. Like the idea is like really scary. Cause he calls it the idea you shouldn't think, which is, he was talking about the Skinner box, B.F. Skinner. For those of you who don't know, he's a behaviorism? Behaviorist.
Behavioral psychologist.
Yeah. Behavioral psychologist. The idea is like, you can actually create a system and put a being inside of it, and the system can perfectly train the being to do whatever it wants, because anything that a human being does is not based on some autonomous self, but is just based on like really basic survival mechanisms. Right. That if I can fully understand the way your meat machine works, then I can like program you in a way that I can do whatever I want to you. And this is what con artists do. This is what fucking like fascist governments do. This is what brainwashing is. But
that's it.
And so, but if a machine intelligence starts doing that, then it's going to do it so much better than any manipulative force has ever done it, that theoretically it will be able to hypnotize the entire species and make it do whatever it wants. And that would be the first thing it would do. Is like, and this is like, if you read Nick Bostrom's book on AI, this is what he talks about. It's like, when the AI comes, you're not going to know it.
You're not going to know. That's not right. We think of these big robots tromping through Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like I can't help but think of Terminator, but really the AI, I think it's actually one of the best analogies. I don't remember if it's from that book or from another one, but he talks about how when you're walking down the street and you see there's some ants on the ground and you squish them and you kill 1,000 ants by one step, you don't actually hate the ants. You're just stepping on their colony because you didn't see them, or maybe they're in your way. There's no reason to think that the AI couldn't think of us like that. It doesn't have to be malevolent. We just might be in the way of something else it wants to do.
Sure. Or it might want to, you know, it's going to, I think an AI is going to like, well, we can't even imagine what it's going to do, but Lanier's concept is like, oh yeah, the AI has appeared and it's using our phones to manipulate us. And and that much of what we're doing right now isn't really based on anything other than like being like programmed by the algorithms. But it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is like, it's the artificial steering wheel. As though technology is like, is unnatural. It's the technology is reflecting a thing that's already happening anyway.
Right.
Which is that we are in a Skinner box.
Right. We're in all sorts of Skinner boxes. I mean, society is a Skinner box. Yeah. Learning music is a Skinner box in a certain way.
Yeah.
Art, I think about art all the time, and there's a sort of a feedback loop that happens when we create a song and then we go out and release it to the world and play it and get this feedback, then go back in. And that's still, that feedback mechanism is really what he's talking about there. And one of the things that he says in the book is when he's talking about variable rewards, right? Like if the mouse goes up and hits the thing and gets the piece of cocaine every single time, it doesn't like it. But if it doesn't know when it is going to get the treat, I don't remember. Is it food or cocaine? I don't remember.
Either one works.
It's the same thing.
Depends on the mouse.
If you don't know when you're going to get it, then it becomes way more addicting. Yeah. And that's why sort of like when you when you open Instagram, they've actually put all of the little notifications in one thing, right? It's not, they don't have follow, heart, comment all in the same thing. And they sort of batch them together. So you never know what you're going to get. It's, it's a special treat.
Mix it up.
It's a special treat every time.
That is the, I mean, the, you know, where he's obviously right, man, is that like, it's like, okay, sure, maybe fucking nature is a goddamn Skinner box, but it's like, guess who didn't make nature? DARPA. All right? One thing we know is DARPA didn't do the Big Bang, right? So do you, like, what, like, sure, okay, hippie, yeah, nature's a fucking Skinner box, you dumbass, but what happens when fucking DARPA's AI decides it wants to, like, like scan the basic, elemental, primordial, psychic pillars of a human being, and then the way he puts it is really quite terrifying, and I do understand why he says don't think about it. Is like and what happens if AI begins to do to us what we do to cats every time we take a laser pointer and shine it on the floor?
Right.
That fucking cat's completely absorbed in the laser pointer. It's just running around. It doesn't know what's happening. What happens when an AI starts doing that with us? Monkey descendants. It's just like, okay, let's do civil war. Let's do a civil war. Okay, oh shit. Well, we've done a scan. We definitely need to do a population reduction. We'll be fine. Let's do, we're in the clouds. Let's do a thermonuclear war over here. Let's do a mass die-off. Or how about this? Even better, let's just start putting out there some kind of idea about how we shouldn't procreate anymore, and let's see if we can do it. Or let's do a variety of ways, probably. Yes. You know? Let's just drop their population by 60%. That's the goal.
Let's separate everyone drastically.
Yeah. That's the fear. It's like somewhere in between. But, you know, again, what it all comes down to, think about all that shit as much as you want, or as Lanier brilliantly says, don't think about it. How about this? Do what you can right now.
That's right.
And that is why I think the teachings that we have been attracted to are so particularly beautiful in their simplicity, which is we work on ourselves so we can help the person closest to us. And that's what we do. The idea is we're going to work on ourselves right now. And by that, we're going to try to wake up, remember. And the more we can remember, the kinder we'll be.
Yes, that's all there is to it. And there's, and I love how with these teachings, there's also nothing really spooky to believe either. Like that's just really the basis of the whole thing, right? And there's no dogma. We work on ourselves. We have a relationship with that truest part of ourselves from which we can then share our gifts with others around us.
What a blast, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hanging out with me. And, wow, I hope you'll do it again sometime.
I would love to come back.
How can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Boretta, B-O-R-E-T-A, and all other social networks. And then that's where you can find the Ram Dass Imagine meditation is there. And then my band, The Glitch Mob, The Glitch Mob on social networks.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Self, thanks for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed this episode of the DTFH, won't you do us the great honor of subscribing at iTunes. If you want to find Justin, all the links you need to find him are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com, along with a link to his amazing track, Imagine, and many other links, millions of great, great tweets, the best tweets, the most incredible tweets, like seriously, all the best links, tweets, clicks, strips, trips, and trims are located over at DuncanTrussell.com. I hope you all have a spectacular week. And you know, this is a little weird. I usually don't do this, but for those of you who listened through the entire thing and are now listening to the outro, as this is called, oh man, have you Googled this crazy shit that's happening at the Solar Observatory in New Mexico? Google it. It's the weirdest thing ever. A solar telescope was shut down, surrounded by the FBI. The post office nearby was cleared out. Something crazy is going on in New Mexico at a solar observatory. What has happened? Have they found aliens on the sun? Did the Chinese hack the telescope? Did someone send some weird shit through the post office to the solar observatory?
Mm-hmm.